Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Fukushima et al. Titled, Acetylation and Succinylation Contribute to Maturational Alterations in Energy Metabolism in the Newborn Heart. This article published June 3, 2016. Joining me today are Associate Editor Ajay Shah, Lead Author and Associate Editor Gary Lopeshuk, and Content Expert Luke Bertrand. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. Hello, everyone. A lot of people might think that we really understand how metabolism works in the heart, and indeed we do, many aspects of it. But actually, the molecular mechanisms regulating changes in metabolism are still not well understood. And this paper we're discussing today really looks at a relatively recently described post-translational mechanism. So, Gary, would you like to tell us briefly the main findings of your study?
Sure. Thanks, AJ. One of the most dramatic physiological changes that I'm aware of is this huge and dramatic increase in fatty acid oxidation in the immediate newborn period. And we've been investigating at the molecular level what is causing this dramatic rise in fatty acid oxidation in the heart in newborns. But in this paper, we were interested in this new area of post-translational modification that involves potentially acetylation of proteins. And what we found in the newborn heart, a rabbit heart in this particular case, is that there's a rapid acetylation of a number of mitochondrial enzymes that occur in the newborn period. And some of these enzymes that are acetylated are involved in fatty acid oxidation. There is an increased acetylation of these fatty acid oxidative enzymes, which correlates with an increased activity. And we think this is an important contributing factor to a maturation of fatty acid oxidation in the newborn period.
Thanks, Gary. It's a really interesting mechanism and a hypothesis. Luke, from your perspective, major critique of the paper?
This paper has been nicely designed using ex vivo perfused heart of a rabbit and evaluating the metabolism and the different metabolism, especially of fatty acid, but not only fatty acid, and making correlation between this modification of metabolism during the newborn stay in line with different modification, not only acetylation, but also succinylation. And this summary is very new in the field because indeed there is a rapid acetylation, not only of mitochondrial proteins, but also of proteins located in the cytoplasmic region, regulating as well as fatty acid metabolism and counteracting glucose metabolism. And this is really new.
So Gary, one of the things that you suggest in the paper is that this really interesting mitochondrial enzyme, GCN5L1, potentially is important in some of the changes that you see. And my question is, what regulates the GCN5L1?
Well, that's a very good question, and we're not actually sure what is responsible for the change in activity. There is an increased expression, and that seems to be what we believe is the main reason for the increased acetylation. There's a very important sirtuin, which is a deacetylase, sirtuin-3, that can change quite dramatically and contribute to acetylation changes. And surprisingly, we didn't actually see much of a change in sirtuin expression. At the moment, we don't know a lot about what regulates GCN5L1.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that there might be some more proximal level of control given the quite complex pattern of changes that you find in your study, right? In several different pathways and in several different compartments of the cell.
Yes, I mean, PGC1-alpha is a very important transcriptional regulator of mitochondrial biogenesis. And we've shown that in these studies that its acetylation is decreased post-birth, and that it's been known that acetylation of PGC1-alpha inhibits its activity. So in this particular case, decreased acetylation may increase PGC1-alpha transcriptional activity and mitochondrial biogenesis. Whether that actually is contributing to increased GCN5L1 expression, it's not really clear at this moment.
So Luke, from your perspective, Any thoughts on how this might all be integrated? And the other question which occurs to me is how the acetylation is kind of integrated with other post-translational changes, at least in some other proteins, like phosphorylation or glycosylation.
This is a very interesting question indeed, and there are a lot of questions remaining. One of the most important ones for me is to try to understand, as Gary just said before, why and how there is an increase in acetylation in the mitochondria simultaneously to a decrease of acetylation in the nucleus, knowing that there are not so many different deacetylases and acetyltransferases. In comparison to phosphorylation, for example, there are more than 500 different protein kinases. This is not the case for the acetylation processes to regulate. So the most interesting next question will be to understand how you can have opposite acetylation processes in two different compartments. Gary, do you think that there is a master regulator in all the different proteins that you see that are modified by acetylation or the different protein involved in this acetylation?
That's a good question. I don't know if there's a master regulator. There clearly is a number of sirtuins with different activity, like the sirtuin 5 is more of a desuccinylase, a demyelinase, as opposed to sirtuin 3 in the mitochondria, which is a deacetylase. Whether there's a master regulator of that, I don't know, but you know, I think there's going to be a real complex overlap between the kinases and the deacetylases. And AMPK is a good example of that because it goes up very dramatically in the newborn heart and contributes to an increase in fat oxidation. But it may very well also contribute to the acetylation process.
Now, Gary, when you get to the adult heart, the healthy adult heart, this is supposed to be metabolically flexible, right? So it's able to use, to a certain extent, whatever substrate you give it, whether it's fatty acids or glucose. And I was wondering whether you think acetylation would still be important in that setting. And if so, do you think that it would be dynamically regulated?
Yes, that's a good question. I do believe it's very important and also under dynamic regulation. And we do know already that under certain conditions like obesity or diabetes or high-fat feeding or fasting, the sirtuins, the mitochondrial sirtuins, can change. And for instance, SIRT3 upregulation can start deacetylating different proteins. And in high-fat feeding, sirtuin-3 activity decreases and increases acetylation status of the mitochondrial enzymes, which we think contributes to a higher fat oxidation and, in this case, a loss of metabolic flexibility as you prevent glucose oxidation from occurring because of this increased acetylation.
You know, a lot of people listening might be working in the area of adult cardiac disease. And the obvious question is, what lessons do you think one might learn from what you found in this very interesting study that potentially might apply in the adult failing or diseased heart?
Well, that's a very good question, and we're actually interested in that as well, because in heart failure, and there is a mitochondrial acetylation that seems to be occurring, and the consequences of that on mitochondrial function and metabolism is, I think, very important and very well could be contributing to an energetic crisis that may occur in the failing heart. So I think a better understanding of the acetylation process in heart failure in the adult heart and in the newborn, by the way, will help us potentially develop therapeutic approaches to trying to improve energetics by modifying the acetylation process.
Luke, from your perspective?
Yeah, this is exactly the key point. Indeed, in type 2 diabetes, there is a metabolic inflexibility favoring the use of fatty acids, and vice versa in hypertrophy. During myocardial hypertrophy, you have also a metabolic inflexibility, but favorizing glucose utilization. So it would be very interesting to see if the acetylation processes are similarly modified or more in line with the data of Gary, if they are in the opposite way, to try to understand how glucose is used in the hypertrophy myocardium, whereas fatty acid is only used in the diabetic hearts.
Both of you mentioned potential therapies. Kind of my last question is, can you tell us what a therapy would look like? What would it target?
Well, one of the approaches right now is to target sirtuin-1, which is, you know, in caloric restriction, and people believe there's a longevity gene, but trying to activate sirtuin-1 to change acetylation status in the nucleus and the cytoplasm is one approach. I think at a mitochondrial level, targeting the mitochondrial specific sirtuins like sirtuin-3 may be in a potential approach. Or alternatively, now that we know the GCN5L1 is in mitochondrial acetylase, that may be a target potentially to inhibit its activity as opposed to potentially stimulating SIRT3 activity in the mitochondria.
Well, I must say that I'm a little bit afraid to try to have a therapeutic target related directly to the acetylases or to acetyltransferases. It's exactly like protein kinases. The problem is that all these enzymes have so pleiotropic actions that if you try to target one of them, you could, of course, obtain a positive action on some particular molecular mechanism, but you can have a lot of off-target that could be deleterious. So from my point of view, I would say that to try to understand which enzymes are phosphorylated or acetylated and to try to modify specifically the acetylation of one of these enzymes could be better. But I know it's more difficult to discover in the next future.
Yeah, I agree with Luke completely. Targeting the actual acetylation sites would be much more specific than a generalized acetylation or deacetylation process. One of the things we're going to have to know more about is all of these enzymes that are acetylated, there's not necessarily one acetylation site. There's a number of key acetylation, lysine acetylation sites. There's not necessarily going to be the same physiological response of acetylation at one site versus the other.
Yeah, it sounds as though it's certainly a very fertile area for further investigations and many different aspects, the physiology, as you say, the molecular mechanisms and the structural biology maybe of the enzymes and so on. Well, thank you both very much indeed for discussing this really interesting paper, and I hope folks will go and read the paper in detail and see what they make of it. Thank you all.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.